You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. What a show we've got for you today. Domestic football back with a bang. So much to talk about. Later on in the programme, Ali Moreno here to discuss Atletico Madrid's 1-0 victory over Barcelona. He'll also be taking us through one of the most extraordinary penalty shootouts you'll ever see in MLS. Gab Marcotti here to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo's MVP performance as Juventus take all 3 points in Italy. Yanar Fjordsoff is here to get excited once again about Erling Haaland, who just scored the 4 goals today, plus Bayern dropping points as well. We'll kick things off, though, in the Premier League. And what a statement win it was for Tottenham Hotspur today, beating Manchester City by 2-0. We're here to discuss it, Frank Leboeuf and Craig Burley. Craig, Spurs did everything right today.
They did everything that we knew they would. It's like we talked about it and we said, look, you know, the problem for City is if they have another catastrophe at the back, then they could lose this game. And Tottenham knew that. And look, I heard all these things about masterclasses and stuff. They went out with a plan to drop Højbjerg and Sissoko back in to make a back six at times and allow the fullbacks to stay wide so that they couldn't be split down with those little passes down between the centre-halves and the full-backs. And they defended really well. I mean, really well. And then Harry Kane's positioning when they were on counter-attacks was excellent. And then they got runners off them. So you can't criticise Spurs. I mean, Spurs, you know, we talk about Spurs on this show as, you know, they're not really dominating games and stuff, but they were never even going to try that against City. They know they can't go head-to-head in a footballing parlance against this City side. So they just decided to hunker in, wait for their opportunity and take it.
And it worked well, Frank.
It did. It worked very well. And the first goal is really what we were expecting from them, you know, being strong defensively and very, very fast in counter-attack. And when Ndombele got the ball and gave it to Son, even if they have to thank, you know, Laporte or Diaz, I don't know which one of them made the non-covering mistake. They were so fast and so effective and efficient that they scored the goal. And they did the same. Did the same also after on the second goal. 1-2 touches. Kane absolutely perfect in that position as a former real number 10. Making so many assists, I think it's 9 in 9 goals. It's absolutely accurate in that position. And Tottenham did the game they had to do against a team who only thinks about proceeding the ball and not trying to cross the ball when they have the chance to. I think Guardiola has to stop thinking that making 10 passes give you one goal. I don't know. They have to sometimes do the crossing, be more direct, and I don't know, try something to score goals. And on top of it, they were so clumsy today that when they tried it, they missed it. So no doubt that Tottenham, for me, deserved that win.
Craig, when we've discussed the possibility of Spurs being title contenders, you've been quite down on that opinion. Has what you saw over the 90 minutes today changed your mind at all?
Not really, because you have to ask the questions. You're going to have to be better than City and Liverpool to win the league. Although City are struggling at the moment, I would imagine that will change. Look, there's no doubt he's solidified them and they're a threat on the counter-attack. It's a completely different style to the last 5 years under Pochettino. Completely the opposite. But Mourinho will say, this has been successful for me for most of my career. The one thing I would say, Dan, is I may have changed my mind when you look at the upcoming games. Chelsea, Arsenal, Palace, Liverpool, Leicester City, Wolverhampton, all coming up in the next 6 or 7 games. If they come through that and they're still flying, then the answer will be, yeah. But that's a big haul of games in a short period of time against the better sides in the Premier League. Now, they've just knocked one of the better sides off their perch today. if they continue against the teams that I just mentioned there, some of those games are obviously home and away, then they're probably going to think to themselves, we are in this. But that's a big if at the moment.
Craig, you mentioned there you don't see this poor run from City continuing. Why not? Because they're not offering any sort of change or any sort of optimism, I feel, for their fans at the moment. They have a lot of the ball but don't do much with it.
Yeah, well, I'm not suggesting they're going to go on a 15-match winning streak, but clearly they'll pick up and they won't be where they are on the table for very long, because they will come up against less organised sides with poorer players than Tottenham, who won't be able to do what Tottenham did on the counter-attack, and who don't have the Harry Kanes and the Toby Alderweireld and the Hugo Lloris and all these players. So they'll pick up points. But that's not to get away from a couple of criticisms, and I don't know what Frank's going to say, but just to go back to Frank's point, he's absolutely right. It's not just about possession. A couple of major criticisms here of Manchester City. One, clearly they can't defend, right? Clearly, properly, in those scenarios. And that buck stops with not just the players, but the coach. Coaching's not just about fancy Dan, possession, tucking the fullbacks into midfield scenario to get an extra man so that you can outplay people. People is also coaching. Coaching is also getting people to do the job that Frank Leboeuf used to do, and that's defend. Because defending is a hugely important part of the game. It's one of the reasons why he's not got the Holy Grail, the Champions League, since he left Barcelona. Because at key times, Bayern Munich and Manchester City have been poor defensively in the big games. The positioning of Laporte and Ruben Dias and João Cancelo's lack of awareness was just scary. And that doesn't fall on deaf ears. But it all comes back to the coach. The buck stops with him. The second one is, and it's going back to Frank's point, and Bernardo Silva wasn't the only one, Dan. Mm. But a couple of times in the first half, he cut infield in the penalty box onto his favoured left foot. He was central and then dropped the shoulder another three times and played it wide. When a team's sitting as deep as this, you should be pot-shotting at Hugo Lloris from 25 yards. I should see a dozen strikes at goal on Hugo Lloris from outside the box. All I'm seeing is tippy-tappy football. The second half is a chance to cross the ball in the box, Bernardo Silva, on the left-hand side from a great position. He turns back again. I mean, this again falls back on Guardiola. Is he telling these guys he wants to see the perfect goal every time? Because that's just not going to happen. So it's a player thing, but it's also a coach thing. He signed a new deal, but he's going to have to find a fix for this.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about Manchester City's defence over the last 18 months, Frank, but this is a City side that's only scored 10 goals in the opening 8 matches.
Yeah, it's a problem, and I completely agree with Craig on that matter. You know, when you only think about making the plus pass where you have the possibility of shooting, of crossing, and it drives me crazy, really. I'm in front of the television, I threw my telephone away, you know, and I said, what the hell? I don't understand football anymore. What are they looking for? If it's to get the statistic of the team who possess the ball the most, they're going to win it, the championship, from far. But that's not the point. You have to score a goal. So on top of being clumsy today, there are chances that they didn't get. They didn't take those chances to score and to shoot. And I don't understand it. Sometimes they go so far on trying to get into the players and to take them on, but to make another passes where it's more simple than that, and you have to go and shoot. And challenge the goalkeeper, but they don't do that, and it's like they want to go with the ball into the net. That drives me crazy. And on top of it, the defensive aspect that Craig mentioned, it's also the fact that the team is completely unbalanced. But Guardiola always played like that. When he was for Barcelona, because of the position of the ball, he went to an offensive choice of players where you don't have the type of player you need to try to correct the counter-attack you're gonna face. And those players, the two central half, for example, they are in danger all the time when they face good players like Tottenham has. And that's the problem with the Guardiola aspect of the football. You don't protect your defenders because you choose to attack. So if therefore you choose to attack, please shoot on goals. Otherwise, it means nothing.
8 points separate Spurs and City. Frank, who finishes higher at the end of the season?
Again, I will have to agree with Craig. If they go through the 5 or 6 game with winning maybe, I don't know, 15 or 18 points, you know, through that those games, you can say that Spurs are contenders. But now it's too early, and it's too early also to condemn Manchester City, because I think, of course, they have the quality and the players and also the coach to change everything and to get better and better and to rectify the problem that they have.
Meanwhile, Manchester United registered their first Premier League win at Old Trafford this season to move above Manchester City in the table. 1-0 victory against West Brom, Craig. A pretty forgettable match, I suppose. That penalty that was initially awarded to West Brom and then overturned after the referee went to the monitor, the big talking point.
Quite incredible. I mean, quite incredible. I mean, David Coote's name has been mentioned in so many VAR incidents from Stockley Park, and here we get... We actually get to see one live at Old Trafford, because for those United fans talking about a potential contact on the ball, the player was kicked in the shin before there was even any contact, if there was contact with the ball. It was a clear kick on the player's shin. And so it was quite an incredible decision. It wasn't an incredible match, so nothing changes. City, United have got 2 wins in the last 2 league games, but nothing changes in terms of my opinion of the manager and the team. They're extremely average, and it was a struggle against one of the Premier League's poorer teams, and they can only be thankful, United, that West Brom struggle for goals. And that's the only reason, and the penalty kick, that they've walked away with 3 points. But yeah, the decision, a lack of that decision, in my opinion, was completely incredible.
Was it a penalty for you, Frank?
It was. It was a clear penalty. He missed the ball at first and kicked the shin of Gallagher. So it's a clear penalty. And when he went to the VAR, I said, well, he's gonna confirm the penalty, because it cannot be otherwise. Again, my phone flew.
that phone's and, getting a bat in,
because
Frank.
I couldn't understand. Yeah, I'm going to have to change my phone tomorrow. But I got crazy. And just before the penalty of Mata kicks on a defender handball, which is a penalty, it was a foul on Gallagher again, just outside the 16-yard box for West Brom. So it's a big scandal again from a ref. And that I don't understand. You know, you could have understood that before when we didn't have the VAR. But now that we have the VAR, there is no excuses for that kind of mistakes from the referees. I don't know. He has to stop. That guy has to stop. He cannot ref, or the guy in the box, I don't know where they are. They have to stop, because we've been talking about that so many times. They make so stupid mistakes who can change and put West Brom in the championship next season because they couldn't draw against Manchester United. That's stupid.
How would you sum it?
It has to be a clear and obvious error.
Yeah.
And when he goes over to the monitor, clearly it is not a clear and obvious error from his initial instinct. His initial instinct in giving the penalty was that it was contact on Gallagher's shin. And the replays were clear in saying that his initial instincts were right. So even in the laws of VAR, or the interpretation of VAR, his initial giving of the penalty and then looking at it in the monitor wasn't a clear and obvious error of his. So even in that respect, he should not have overturned it. But and when you're a team that's going to be fighting relegation, and clearly West Brom are, then all these little things that go against you add up at the end of the year and can cost your club millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Overall, Frank, how would you sum up United's performance?
Poor, really poor. I mean, I'm worried about Martial. And Martial is a fantastic player, and when he's in confidence, he's okay. But he played with the national team and missed 3 chances. I think it was against Portugal in the first half. Mm. Today, again, he had 1 chance and he missed it. And he was, I think, for a worldwide class player, an easy chance to score, and he didn't. He has to be a killer, much more than that. And after, I don't know if we're going to talk about Pogba, if he's really injured or not, but I'm not pleased with any players. What I saw was a poor performance. and made me think that even West Brom could have scored two goals. He hit the crossbar. I think Tansen had a very good chance just before Man United got a penalty. It's not a team who can compete at the top if they show that kind of performances against West Brom, maybe a future relegated team. It has to be better. It's Manchester United. It's not an average club.
Anthony Martial, Dan, thinks he's a better player than what he is. Simple as that. When Edison, because he's a talent. But we talked about it at the end of last year, can he carry a club of this size as a striker? And we see flashes of it. But when Edison Cavani came on the field, the first words he must have uttered to Anthony Martial is, you know you're allowed to move and make runs. Because he doesn't do enough. And on top of that, his finishing wasn't great today. So I just think sometimes with that player, there's an arrogance that it's just going to happen rather than, you know, a player that's going to go out there and make it happen. And that's a problem.
Elsewhere, last point on the Premier League, Chelsea with a 2-0 victory over Newcastle. Could have been a lot more, actually, Craig. Chelsea looked good today.
Yeah, no Thiago Silva, no Havertz. We talked about that. Havertz was available, but I don't think quite sharp enough to play. But I think, you know, we talked about Lampard over, you know, about a month ago, trying to find the pieces of the puzzle that work best. And I think he's almost 99% there. I think having a bigger guy through the middle and moving Werner onto the left side certainly gives him more freedom to make those penetrating runs, and we saw that today. Mm. And then, of course, with the balance of Ziyech on the right coming in and that lovely left foot of his. On top of that, Mount playing a little bit deeper. He's starting to find the right balance of his squad. And, of course, with Thiago Silva, when he's available again to marshal that back line, then things are looking pretty good. I've got to say they're in great-looking shape. They've got people coming back from injury. But it was no surprise they won the game because Newcastle were always going to sit in. And it was only a matter of time before Chelsea got the goals to take the 3 points.
That run from Werner and the assist for that second goal would have got Chelsea fans excited, Frank, about what's more to come from him.
Yeah, he's exceptional. And he's showing to the world that even if you don't have a good pre-season, you can be in a good shape, in a good form, and showing your best to the new club. And some people say, yeah, you know, he needs 6 months to adapt. This is not the case for Werner. I mean, he came before, you know, the final eight and of Champions League and didn't want to play for Leipzig, and he trained with the players. But as soon as the Premier League started, he was there, spot on. And I like those kind of players who don't wonder, you know, if because they play in another country, how long is it going to take for them to adapt. They go for it, they enjoy it, and they show it. And it's what Werner is doing. I mean, what he did today again, I mean, he could have scored a goal in the first half. He gave that fantastic assist to Tammy Abraham. I mean, yeah, Chelsea is doing great. You know, it takes two to tango, so it wasn't a fantastic game because Newcastle didn't play and conceded a goal after 10 minutes that the game was already over. And thanks to Darlow in goal, that the score wasn't bigger than that. But Chelsea did the game, and Werner was maybe the best player on the field.
It's a perfect era, Dan, for Timo Werner to play in, isn't it? Because, you know, the protection that the players get just allows his skill set and his pace and his balance and his running power to showcase. I mean, many moons ago, he was the type of player that Dennis Wise would have tried to snap. If he missed him, I would have had to go at him. And if I missed him, Frank Leboeuf would have finally got him. But you can't do that anymore, can you? You just don't get away with that kind of defending anymore. So you've got to be clever, you've got to stay on your feet. And that's difficult against a player who's so quick and so balanced and so direct. So, yeah, one of the first names in the Chelsea team sheet, and I don't think that's going to change.
Well, that win for Chelsea...
Dan, just one thing. We have to add somebody who's coming back to his best is N'Golo Kante. I mean, what he did with the national team, but what he did today again, you can see he's everywhere, catches the ball everywhere, recovering all the ball lost. I mean, that guy is absolutely fantastic. I don't know when he's going to stop running. we don't need to substitute him when we see the other tired. And also Zuma. Zuma was very good. Reece James, fantastic as well. No, good, very good game from Chelsea.
Chelsea then second in the table, 2 points adrift of Spurs. What a massive game. You take a look at the league table. Well, it is tomorrow. Leicester, of course, taking on Liverpool. The winner of that tie could go top of the league.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
In Spain, Atletico Madrid registered their first win in La Liga against Barcelona for 10 years. Yannick Carrasco making the most of Ter Stegen just losing his mind and going for a run just before the break, which gives Atleti all 3 points and put them in a very good position when it comes to La Liga title. Ali Moreno joins us. Ali, a deserved win?
Yes, absolutely. Atletico Madrid were far better than Barcelona. And not because they created a bunch of opportunities and not because Ter Stegen had to come up with a bunch of saves, because indeed it is a mistake that Ter Stegen that leans this game in the direction of Atletico Madrid. But for me, it's the approach that Atletico Madrid took. If you didn't watch this game and you hear out and about that Atletico Madrid beat Barcelona 1-0, you may think, going back in time, that Atletico Madrid was defensive, was physical through the midfield, that they got a goal on a set piece and that's how they won it 1-0. And in the end, it was all about how practical and efficient they were defensively. It was none of that from Atletico Madrid, which I thought was an excellent sign to see from a team that has big goals and big aspirations for La Liga title, and that you saw a team that actually attacked Barcelona, that had long, sustained periods of possession. And in particular, in the first half, there was a sequence early on where it was pass after pass after pass, forward and back and sideways and forward and back, and eventually a beautiful run in behind by Llorente. He hits a crossbar off of that. And there were a few sequences like that through the game that you're not used to seeing Atletico Madrid in years past, completing those passes, completing those chances, completing those opportunities, and taking those opportunities forward and actually getting and producing shots off of those long stretches of possession. I thought that today was a big step forward for Atletico Madrid in the way that they're playing and the confidence with which they're playing.
Does it make them favorites for La Liga?
Yes. Copy-paste my last answer. Yes, absolutely. You just have to look at the consistency of play. Can they defend in the back line? Yes. Can they defend through the midfield? Yes. Do they have enough talent in the attack and have to create problems and create chances and opportunities when you need to do that as well? And the answer is yes. Atletico Madrid, as I look over the landscape of La Liga, and take Real Sociedad, take Villarreal, take Real Madrid, take Barcelona if you wish, Atletico Madrid is the far superior team and in the far more consistent team, all those groups that I just mentioned.
What was wrong with Barcelona today?
I mean, where to start with Barcelona? I think there were moments in which you thought, you know what? Not bad. But it's because the bar has been lower to a point in which Dembele takes a man on and you're like, yes, he beat somebody. He beat him with speed. He dips his shoulder. He gets a cross in. Antoine Griezmann gets a shot on goal. And you're thinking, well, this is a good start to the game. This is the way that Barcelona is going to play. But it's just not enough of that. Very little from Lionel Messi, couple of instances during the game that maybe he showed a little bit of class and a little bit of quality, but it's what you expect from Lionel Messi, and you would want him to have far more impact in this game. Griezmann, again, a lot of running, a lot of moving, a lot of shifting, but not a lot of game-changing moments and not a lot of impact in the outcome of the game. And overall, one of the pictures that stays with me from this game is the one or few chances that Barcelona had was late in the first half, where Jordi Alba plays the ball through the legs of Kieran Trippier and finds the run of Lionel Messi. And as he's looking for options to cross the ball into a position which you can tap it in, there's only Pedri, who's pretty much just standing in the penalty spot saying, well, that's not me. That's not what I do. And it just gives you a clear picture of how much they miss not only Luis Suarez, but somebody in a position that can actually score goals for you, that you're an actual option inside the 18-yard box. All this rotation is on false nine, and this guy and that guy, and he comes and he goes, and then he occupies his space, and Messi drops him behind. All that's great. But when there's an opportunity to actually cross the ball for a tap, and there's nobody there available. And that is just symptomatic of what Barcelona is right now. A team that, yeah, they'll possess the ball, but they don't do a whole lot with that possession.
Meanwhile, Villarreal played out a 1-1 draw against Real Madrid. Real Madrid with loads of players missing for this game, and it showed. Villarreal will be disappointed they didn't get the win.
I tell you, somebody pulled the plug on Real Madrid about 60 minutes into the game, because up until that point, they had been very good, very, very well organized, very effective with their possession. There were players that were drifting in and out of spaces. Eden Hazard was started on the left, but really was shifting more towards the middle and trying to combine. Mariano was active. Lucas Vazquez, that he always gives you a lot of work. And then you had the decision of Zinedine Zidane to play with a double pivot with Toni Kroos and Luka Modric because Casemiro was not available. And everything was working fine. But about 60 minutes in, it's almost as if, well, we have no more legs. And Luka Modric is bending over. And Toni Kroos is turning the ball over in bad areas. And not just trying to play it out of the backs, that's not working out. And then their turnovers start happening and happening more and more. And then the substitutions come in and you think, okay, well, this is sort of the fresh blood that they need. This is the energy that they need. Not so much. What you got was Vinicius coming in and turning the ball over in a bad area. And then from there, Villarreal goes on the other side, and they got themselves Villarreal players off the bench that made a difference. Chukwueze and that change of speed, because you had a team that was tired in Real Madrid. When you had a little pace in the attack for Villarreal, Real Madrid simply could not keep up, and so being a penalty kick, Gerard Moreno scores 1-1. And from then on, it was Real Madrid hanging on and Villarreal looking for the winner. They did not achieve that, but I still thought that Real Madrid, man, they struggled through the last 30 minutes of that game.
Thank you very much, Ali. Just taking a look at what those results mean regarding the table. Real Sociedad top. They, in fact, have the chance to extend their lead. They're in action, of course, later this weekend. Atleti up to second. Atleti, remember, have games in hand over most of those around them. Villarreal third with that point. Real Madrid fourth. Barcelona all the way down in 10th. Already 9 points off the top of the table. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's head to Germany, where it finished Bayern Munich 1, Werder Bremen 1. Yanar Fjortoff joins us to reflect on this game. Bayern's first draw of the season, Jan.
Yeah, and it was always a surprise when Bayern let anything go. But if we know Werder Bremen, I think they had 1-1 four games in a row. So, okay, let's make it the fifth time. And that was not the Bayern, of course, they had a big chance with Choupo-Moting. They had one at the bar and something, but that was not the best performances of Bayern Munich, but normally that's still enough to get them 3 points. So respect Werder Bremen.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? As if we got to the 85th minute, you thought, right, someone's going to do something here from Bayern, as we've seen so many times in the past, to get it done, but they didn't. What were the issues today? Why weren't they at their best?
Well, I think sometimes we have to see a Bayern also being a bit affected by all the games they played this season. And remember, a team like Bayern Munich will get their players back from international duties in and around the world. And sometimes Bayern Munich got to show rest of German football that they are humans. They're not only machines who entertain us, winning games, scoring goals for fun all the time. So good for the league, good for the neutrals of us that want to see a bit more excitement in the German Bundesliga.
In the States, a lot of eyes on Josh Sargent. He did everything right today apart from score.
Yeah, and sometimes we criticize Sargent for not scoring enough goals, but he's a young kid, and as you see, I think he's doing fantastic here. Get himself in good position. And Manuel Neuer, sometimes people say he's not the best goalkeeper in the world, and when he conceded six for Germany against Spain, people say, yeah, you see, he's getting too old. Well, he didn't look too old there. But I think Sargent today did a great game. I mean, remember, he played against the best team in the world, setting up Eggestein here. Yeah. It's 1-0, and he's doing that brilliantly, using his body, have the calmness to see where is the better position players. And it was 1-0 to Werder Bremen. And then at 1-1, he has a fantastic chance here against Manuel Neuer. And then he's using, now this is Eggestein, of course, put him through there. And there was chances after chances. And we know that Bayern Munich, they like to stand high with their back four. So there will be times when you can get chances like this. This was a good try for Sargent. Goretzka.
And then this was the big chance, wasn't it? This was the one-on-one.
I don't think he's self-believing himself there. Sometimes as a striker, you get too much time.
Right.
That is a poor effort of Sargent, unfortunately. And it ends 1-1. But Sargent's respect to him, did a great game. And when he starts scoring, he will be a hit in German football.
Speaking of starting scoring, Erling Haaland, of course, added to his many, many goals. With just the four today, the first person to get four goals in the Bundesliga since Aubameyang back in 2016. Borussia Dortmund with a 5-2 victory away against Hertha Berlin. Archie Rintat caught up with Erling Haaland after the game.
Erling Haaland, first of all, what did Lucien Favre say to you as you came off that pitch tonight? Because that was some performance.
To be honest, or after the game, he asked me how many I scored, and he asked me, did you score three? I said, no, four, only four, because you subbed me out. So I'm a bit mad at him right now, but that's how it is.
where exactly is that hat-trick ball going to go for you this time? I hear you've described them like girlfriends before. Where's this next one going?
Yeah, we'll see what happens tonight.
And just finally, you've had quite a good day. You've been named the Golden Boy for this year. Four goals. You're now only one goal off Robert Lewandowski. And you've sent quite a message as well to the man who everybody had been talking about yesterday and indeed today, Youssoufa Moukoko. How would you sum all of this up?
Yeah, it's been a very good day, I'm smiling a little bit now, and yeah, it's been a good day. And about Moukoko, he's the biggest talent in the world right now, and 16 years and one day, that's quite amazing. So he has a big career ahead of him.
If he's the biggest talent in the world, then what are you?
Yeah, I'm over 20 years, so I'm getting old now, so that's how it is.
He seems to love it, Jan. He seems to love everything about it. You know, it's interesting, you look at goal scorers in the past, I'm thinking of someone like Michael Owen, who I grew up watching. You wouldn't see that sort of personality shine after a game. You know, it'd all be, it's about the team, blah, blah, blah. But even like calling the balls his girlfriend, it just adds to the likability of him.
Yeah, and it's been quite tough days for him because he went with a Norwegian national team, as you know. They got tested a player positive. They had to all go to a quarantine. There was a big discussion in Norway, should he be allowed to go back to Germany? Because they'd have different rules. He would have been sitting inside now if he was in Norway. But what Erling Haaland managed to do, whatever he does, he always put himself in a challenges position. He always take that different energy, the expectation, his love for the game, into his motivation, and always doing like this. And in the first half today, the two defenders at Hertha Berlin, there was a good battle, and he was maybe second in that battle. And then he came out, scoring four goals. And what impressed me of this player, of Erling Haaland, is he always seemed to take new steps. Sometimes he comes 1-1 against the goalkeeper, and Neuer saved that ball right to him when he tried to score right to the goalkeeper. And I spoke to his dad, and his dad said they had a long discussion about that. Try not to be so predictable, he told his son. Try to dummy that. And what he did today, of course he dummied the goalkeeper, and it is exactly the same height that he needs to do the ball all the time. And sometimes you're just wondering, with a 20-year-old, how much experience can you have? Yeah. How much can you learn from your own experiences when you're only 20? And it's just a year ago that he had his breakthrough in the Champions League with Red Bull Salzburg. We seem to forget that.
And of course, as Archie mentioned in the interview, won Golden Boy as well. I thought Alphonso Davies should have won it. You agree with me, I'm sure, Jan.
Based on the trophy of the club, yes, at least he should be second. I think that Erling Haaland deserves this big time, because I think what is different between him, Alphonso Davies, a fantastic breakthrough. He would have probably been the breakthrough of the season. But I think the golden boy can only be a golden boy looking like a golden boy. And I think that Alphonso Davies will be happy that he have the golden medals around his neck after winning the treble for Bayern Munich. So I think he will be okay with that.
And we also heard in the interview, of course, them discussing Moukoko coming on, breaking that Bundesliga record, the youngest ever player to feature in the German domestic league one day after his 16th birthday. There is so much hype around him, Jan.
Yeah, and sometimes you just feel, hopefully, the hype is not that correct, because a friend of mine from Germany sent me a text message, and he worked as a journalist, and he said, well, this guy has scored 1 million goals at the youth teams of Dortmund. But obviously, like Erling Haaland said, a great, great talent. And the lucky thing for him that he is in a club like Dortmund, because Dortmund knows how to treat players like this. There is a 16-year-old, mm-hmm. the 17-year-old Bellingham, there is an 18-year-old Reina, and then you have two great old guys, Sancho and Haaland. So they know how to treat these players, and also the philosophy of Dortmund, and they said that times and times again, we have promised the players we will give them playing time, and that is one of the reasons that five of the biggest talents of the world are playing in yellow and black in Dortmund.
Elsewhere, Leipzig will be disappointed that they couldn't make the most of Bayern Munich dropping points. They could only manage a 1-1 draw away against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, I'm happy that we and I still say we, that's my old club, that we got a point. But it was a game that maybe should have been a draw. Poulsen and Forsberg, they came on at halftime. They did a bit difference. The Dane Poulsen scored a great, great goal for Leipzig, getting the 1-1. But obviously, they felt that they were losing 2 points up there. Maybe the big winner, I mean, except from Dortmund, was Bayer Leverkusen, who are like slowly getting their place there in and around Leipzig and Dortmund as being the challengers to Bayern Munich.
Finally, Jan, as you're here, we've got to talk about Radetzky, the Bayer Leverkusen goalkeeper. Of course, this went absolutely viral as one of the most extraordinary own goals, maybe not of only of the season, but of all time. The fact that the ball was going to go out before he touched it just adds more to the comedy element, really, doesn't it?
Well, Radetzky, I mean, if you tried us in training, you wouldn't do it. But yeah, if you see it very slowly, what is happening is that the ball hits his stand foot. Look there. So, I mean, if you tried this in training, you wouldn't manage to do that. And of course, when Leverkusen, just before the end, made a win to put them up to the third place,
yep,
I'm 100% sure no one is more happy than the goalkeeper of Bayer Leverkusen.
No, he said that people can have a laugh, but his beer will still taste good tonight. Thank you very much to Jan. Bayern Munich then, despite the fact they only managed a draw, still remain top of the table, just 1 point though ahead now of Borussia Dortmund. And the Bundesliga continues tomorrow. Freiburg taking on Mainz, that's at 9:30 here on Plus, followed by Köln taking on Union Berlin, that at 12 o'clock.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Just taking a look at what that means for the bracket. So Orlando advance. The Revs have set up a clash with Philadelphia. Columbus advance. They will play the winners of Toronto against Nashville. Meanwhile, in the Western Conference, Sporting KC take on San Jose. Minnesota take on Colorado. We'll talk about that game in a moment, as we will Portland against FC Dallas. And on Tuesday, it's Seattle against LAFC. But let's talk about that Orlando game. Just that whole series, Ali, from the moment in which the goalkeeper got sent off, really, to Benji's penalty, was bonkers.
Yes, it was. And whether you understand why Gaese gets a yellow card or not, then you have to go back to the fact that MLS, and this is a bigger issue, MLS is not on the FIFA calendar. And so, therefore, IFAB rules came into action when the FIFA calendar started. The MLS calendar began before then. And so, therefore, they go back to the 2019-2020 rules, which at that point would be a straight yellow card, not a warning, but a straight yellow card to Gaese for encroaching. Okay. Well, so then he's thrown out. And whatever you think of those laws and whatever you think of the implementation of those laws, yeah,
it was the right thing to do. It was the right interpretation of the law.
Yes. So, okay. Fine, we can move through that. But we can move through that if the referee gives us an idea that he has certainty as to what's happening next, as to what the situation is. I got it under control. I know what needs to happen here. But none of the referees, not Alan Chapman, not the assistant, not the fourth official, not VAR. All you see is Alan Chapman doing this. And he has no real idea as to what's happening. He's trying to get some sort of help from somewhere. It was incredibly exciting, but at the same time, incredibly embarrassing, the mismanagement by the referees of the situation, of the moment. How can you, in your mind, actually believe, yeah, bring a goalkeeper in. Yeah, we'll make a substitution. Yeah, no, that works. That's allowed. It's allowed. Bring him in. Okay. Oh, no. It's not allowed. You can't do that. All right, now we have Rodrigo Schlegel in goal. Okay, he makes a save. He should have his moment. Now he's celebrating. He looks at Alan Chapman. Alan Chapman almost gives him the, no, yeah, you can go celebrate. It's over. No, it's not over. Simple math. It's not over. All of that was just incredibly crazy, and it could have all been avoided had the referees shown a little bit of control. And there was no control whatsoever. And you just allowed the benches to go crazy, the players to go crazy, the fans to go crazy. And when you allow everybody to go crazy, guess what happened? Things get crazy.
Will there be more craziness tomorrow? Ali, is it you and Age you're calling the Portland game? Minnesota against Colorado, yes, tomorrow?
Minnesota against Colorado in what should be a very, very good game. Two teams that had been playing very well towards the end of the season. They carry some momentum going into the playoff. Both coaches, as we spoke to them yesterday, they feel confident about what they're doing, and they're hopeful that they're able to get through this first round of the playoffs. But I tell you, it should be a very good game with a lot of attacking players, certainly on the Minnesota side. Reynoso, Molino, Robin Lutt, they've been playing very well. Kai Kamara back from international duty as well. Minnesota's got a lot of players. And then you have the intrigue of the Kai Kamara trade from Colorado mid-season to Minnesota. And now, as it happens, yeah, they play against each other in the playoffs. It should be a very entertaining game.
And then the later game, Portland against FC Dallas.
And this one would point in the direction of Portland, but it just doesn't feel like Portland has a lot going on for them towards the end of the season. And that momentum was with them, not quite. But you cannot say that the momentum is FC Dallas either, because they just kind of limped their way into the playoff, not exactly dominating games, not exactly outplaying people. And So to me, it just tells me a story of a game that will be very close, very tight, not a lot of goals between these two teams. I'll give the slight edge to Portland because they're playing at home and whatever difference that may make for them. And the fact that they have been a very good sort of win or go home kind of team, as they showed in the Orlando tournament, MLS back tournament.
Ali Moreno, thank you very much. So just to confirm, those games both live tomorrow on ESPN. Great doubleheader. Minnesota United taking on Colorado Rapids, followed by that clash between Portland and FC Dallas. Meanwhile, in Italy, Cristiano Ronaldo brace saw Juventus with a comfortable victory over Cagliari. Gab Marcotti with us to discuss this. Gab, this was good from Juve, wasn't it? They looked good today.
I'd say, Dan, arguably their best performance of the season. I say arguably. It's not just obviously Cristiano getting the two goals, which puts a smile back on his face after after the international break, where maybe he didn't get quite as many as he'd hoped in his pursuit of Ali Dai's record. But beyond that, for Juve, good performance, looked sharp up front. The Arthur combination in midfield worked a lot better. Arthur and Rabiot, of course. Mm. You saw Alexandro back. You saw Matthijs de Ligt back, which I think is always encouraging. So, yeah, good night for Pirlo.
And as you mentioned, Cristiano Ronaldo will grab all the headlines. Two more goals to his tally. He's back. He's hit the ground running.
He certainly has. Now, I'm curious if that goal had been disallowed, the one where he sort of back-heeled it into the box for an assist for Cagliari. I think it was Klavan, or Klavan took a whack to the face anyway. Then it might have been a slightly different story. But no, he looks up, he looks fit, he looks sharp. I think he's really benefiting from playing with Morata and Kulusevski. Mm. Might that be the balance that Pirlo's been looking for up front? But like we said, top to bottom, Juve look good. Now let's see if they can carry it over into the Champions League.
Short and sweet with you today, Gab. Thank you very much. Just taking a look at how the table stands after that victory for Juve. 1 point off Milan at the top. Meanwhile, Atalanta could only manage a 0-0 draw today. Lazio with a 2-0 win. Of course, the big game tomorrow, Napoli taking on AC Milan. And that is a game that is live on ESPN. Coverage starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. I know you're missing international football. We just about got through today, didn't we? Thanks to Gab and Ali. Be sure to stay tuned, though, for extra time. Frank and Craig answering your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig and Frank with us. Will Manchester City finish out of the top four this season, Craig?
No, I don't think so. I think people are reading into things away too early. I do believe they've still got one game in hand. I might be wrong.
No, you're right.
But I think when Aguero's back fit and Sterling's fully fit again, he picked up a knock when he was away with England, they'll win more games than they'll lose. So, yeah, today was a big hiccup for them again. And it seems they still haven't learned those lessons when they're getting counter-attacked. But, you know, if they don't finish in the top four, he's out. He'll probably walk, even though he signed a new deal, because that's not good enough. They can't afford to not be in the top four. Simple as that.
Frank, will they finish outside the top four?
No, I don't think so. I agree. And if he doesn't finish in the top four, yeah, if he's out, he's going to get lots of money with a new deal. Yes. I always talk to coaches who say, you know, you have to get fired when you have a very long contract. It's when you get really rich. Well, he's already rich, so it's okay.
This is a question. Were City correct in extending and renewing Guardiola? Also, if they do sign Messi, does that show Pep can't win major European trophies without Messi? What do you think, Frank? Mm.
I don't know. With what we see with Barca, you know, lately, you know, and I'm not sure Messi is as accurate as he used to be and can change a game. But, I don't know. I still think that Guardiola is able to change some stuff in his football and his thoughts of football, and we rectify everything to make sure that they finish and maybe win the title this season.
Yeah, the Messi conundrum is going to be interesting, obviously, next season, Craig, because he isn't the Lionel Messi who he once was, inevitably age catching up with him. So could it prove almost a little bit of a hindrance if you bring him in?
Well, I doubt it. But, you know, he's still going to deliver for you. I mean, I haven't seen that much of him this season, but clearly after the problems that they had in the summer, then it's going to be a drag of a year for him, particularly the way Barcelona have been playing. But it's interesting, that tweet comes from an obvious United fan, yeah, more bothered about what City are doing rather than the awful guff that United have been serving up. And look, Guardiola doesn't become a bad coach overnight, but he's a coach who has to find a way of fixing the defensive deficiencies of the way his team play. If he doesn't do that, he can bring Messi in. They're still not going to win the Champions League if they defend in that manner. They'll score goals, but they won't win the Champions League if they defend in that manner.
Yeah, Craig, for not agreeing with you on everything today, I would say that the biggest loss of Guardiola from last season is Silva. And we thought that Bernardo Silva will do the job, but we realized that Silva is unique and that is a real miss right now for Manchester City. And they can't cope with that situation. So maybe if Messi comes and plays like Silva, maybe he can be the factor plus to help City to score more goals and to be more effective.
Do Chelsea have the best midfield and attacking depth in the Premier League because of this and their renewed defence? Do you see Chelsea having a higher chance of winning the title than Spurs, Craig?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think Chelsea are a much more talented team than Spurs. Spurs have a good squad, but, you know, Chelsea have a unbelievable amount of attacking options. They've brought great experience in Thiago Silva. They've got a natural fast left back in Chilwell. The emergence of Reece James, both for club and country, has been meteoric for that young man, and he's just taken his game to a new level. Frank mentioned on the show that N'Golo Kanté is looking like the player he was a couple of years ago, and just looks super fit again. And so, yeah, I mean, I just think Chelsea have better options, and they obviously play a different style of football. We'll see what one's going to be the most successful. And I've also showed up the goalkeeping position, so yeah, they're in as good a shape as they can be to mount a title challenge, that's for sure.
Frank, are you worried for PSG against Leipzig? If they get knocked out in the group stage, do you see Thomas Tuchel getting sacked?
Oh, yes, he will be, for sure. I mean, what they showed against Monaco yesterday, where they were leading 2-0, even if they scored a third one and the ref didn't say yes, didn't accept the goal, even if it was a right one. And when Mbappe was out, I didn't recognize Paris Saint-Germain. Well, I don't recognize Paris Saint-Germain this season. I mean, they average. They still keep on winning games because they have more individualities, but in terms of what they show, it's really average. And if they don't go through the group stages, for sure he's out, for sure.
Craig, why isn't counter-attacking football praised enough? Clearly has a high efficiency rate when done right, needs more discipline and look good, not like normal possession play with low chances of penetration and just square passing.
I don't have an issue with counter-attacking football. Never said I did. I mean, if you remember back to the Bayern Munich side that was successful when... what was that coach's name before Guardiola? The old fella, Frank, help me out.
Pellegrini. No, before Guardiola.
No, Bayern Munich.
No, in Bayern?
Yeah.
Jupp Heynckes?
Heynckes. When Heynckes came in, they were super successful, I believe, in the Champions League with a 30-40% possession game and just hitting with the power play going forward. So I don't have an issue with it. Where I have more of an issue, when we've talked about Spurs, and I'm kind of guessing that's where the question's heading, is when they're having those scenarios against a Brighton or, you know, against, you know, a Southampton at home, who've had a good season, actually. But, you know, that's when I scratch my head a little bit more with this Tottenham team, rather than when they do it against Manchester City. So, yeah, I don't have an issue with it, and it can be successful.
Frank, as a fan, Is a fan's reaction or comment ever distracted you during a match that put you off your game?
Yeah, I have an example coming straight to my head, but it's hard to explain on TV. Let's say that I played at Highbury. It was in a League Cup, I think, and I saw a little boy. I think he was like 10 years old, and we just got a... I was going forward, and we got a corner for us. And I saw the little boy, you know, like 4 or 5 yards away, insulting me and, you know, joining the gesture,
right,
and the movement on top of his insult.
Okay.
And I looked close to him. It was his father. And I look at the father and I just say, you know, can you do something about him? You know, that young boy is your son. And he did exactly what his son did, insulting me and doing the same movement. And in fact, it ruined my game. I think we won 4-1. But I kept on thinking about that. And I say, why you have to be such a stupid person because you don't like another team?
Yeah.
Why you have to insult the other instead of supporting? And really, it distracted me. Like it never, because normally I never think about that. But it was just a little boy. And
right.
I say, well, is his life already ruined because he has no education? And that really distracted me. Yeah.
Well, but that's quite deep, Frank, to have that going on during a match, to kind of take your mind there.
Yeah, because there are more important things in life than only a football game. It was a League Cup first. We were already winning like 4-0 or 4-1, I don't know. The game was already over. And when I saw that little boy and I said, well, you know, he needs an education. And the stupid guy close to him doesn't give it to him and doesn't give him a chance. So you shouldn't be a father. And I was very, upset about that guy. And not because he insulted me, but because his son did it.
Yeah.
And at the age of 10, it shouldn't be like that. You should only love football, cheer your team up, and not being able to, or just to think about insulting the opponent. It's crazy.
Craig?
I'd never really got bothered by what people shouted from the stands because it happened every week. I mean, Frank will tell you. The abuse that comes, and it usually starts with the warm-up, because when the warm-up's happening, the stadium's usually, under normal circumstances, half full. And you can hear all the chuntering, depending on what side of the pitch you're warming up. Obviously, if you're away from home, you're probably going to be warming up in front of the home fans anyway. And so the abuse starts, well, it doesn't start then. It starts when you walk off the bus to go into the main reception of a particular ground. So it already starts. But I don't really... The one that sort of got in my head the most, and I think I've told you this many times, is when the guy said to me, I hope you die. And that was before the game, and it was from a supporter of the team that I was playing for. So, and the game hadn't started at that point. So I just thought, well, you know, that's quite incredible. As Frank said, it's a game of football. It was the week after the FA Cup semi-final when
right.
I'd made the mistake. And clearly I didn't try to make the mistake, but I had. And before the game the following week, I was coming back in from the warm-up, and as you go down the tunnel at Stamford Bridge, I don't think they can do it now, but they used to be able to hang over, and as he was hanging over looking down, he shouted, I hope you die, Burley. So that's, you know, it's quite deep when somebody shouts to him like that. It
sure.
sort of takes you back a little bit rather than the normal abuse. But that's, yeah, I think it's quite sad when we have some people in society that are going to go to that level over, you know, a genuine mistake on a game of football.
Switching gears slightly, Frank, which Hollywood actor would you like to portray you in a biopic film? Who are you going for?
Hollywood actor? why not? Yeah, fantastic actor, yeah.
Well, I wasn't thinking
Bruce
of a good actor. I was just thinking he's bald.
Yeah, I was thinking Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I know.
Patrick Stewart.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm sure. What can I expect from you? Bruce Willis as well, you know, because he's bald too. You
yeah.
know.
Frank,
I'm,
you'd play
I'm,
yourself.
I'm, No, I'm not. I'm not a Hollywood actor. First, you know, I'm barely an actor. I would say I would love to play Liam Neeson. I mean, Liam has. I know Liam, and he has a fantastic life. with lots of happiness and also of sadness. I would love to play Liam Neeson. Yeah. What's
that? I know. Frank, we've got some in common. I know Liam Neeson as well.
The same one?
Really?
No,
exactly.
No. Really?
No, I don't. No.
I do.
Who's the most famous person you know, Frank?
I used to know many, many famous person, you know, because I was playing at Chelsea and I was, I used to go to see Tony Blair at the 10 Downing Street.
Oh, he's not having famous, a tea he's with a prime minister. And,
Alistair Campbell. Yeah, it's true that, yeah, of course, Tony Blair is not famous.
No, but
Jack Chirac was a friend.
Like Tom Cruise, people like that, with your Hollywood ways.
Oh, well, it's a kind of a tribute. Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Sean Connery, I saw him a couple of times. And I remember being in the restaurant with Ruth Gullit, and he came up and came to say hi to us. And that was such an honor. And we talked and we saw each other several times. So, yeah, just to think about him, because he passed away lately. And I think that he was a fantastic person and a fantastic actor.
Yeah, there you go. Craig, who would play you in a film?
Oh, George Clooney.
Frank.
Is Bryan Adams famous? Bryan Adams used to come to Chelsea a lot. Would you consider Bryan Adams famous?
You used to go and see him in concert,
oh
didn't you?
Oh, my God.
Bryan Adams, yeah, of course.
Well, Bryan Adams used to come to Chelsea because he was in London a lot and he liked Chelsea. But he also... I've sat in the same reception with him once at a physiotherapist because he used to go to the same physio that myself and Stuart Robson used to go to in London.
Oh,
and Stuart... I walked in there one day and he was there. Yeah,
Stuart Robson brings that up all the time, doesn't
concerts,
it? Because
it
was the same physio as Princess Diana, wasn't it? And Robbo said that he was there and Princess Diana was there one day.
Princess Diana used to go to this physio as well. A lot of people used to go to this physio. But yeah, Bryan Adams then, I presume the old back's a bit bad with carrying the guitar around all the time.
Oh, there we go. Right, that's any more name dropping? That's good. Tony Blair. Right, that's it.
I've met Tony Blair. Tony Blair came to see us. Tony Blair came to see us in Paris the night before we played in the opening match of the World Cup at Stade de France. I mean, that's the last thing. I mean,
what
he was wishing all the Scotland players the best of luck. Like, he really wanted us to win, didn't he?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. God. All right, that is it. We're done. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.